because really we're there to be together and enjoy the day. And the food is great, but it's secondary.
Are you a rural farming woman, wife or mother, struggling to find peace in your busy life? Do you find yourself trying to squeeze joy out of your daily routine, manage stress that seems never-ending, and somehow reconnect with your passions in the midst of it all? Do you love your rural life, yet often feel overwhelmed by the challenges it brings? Welcome to Cultivate Contentment, the podcast designed just for you. I'm Jessica Knight, a fellow rural woman, wife and mother, and I get it. I've been there. Right there in the trenches, juggling the demands of farm life, motherhood, and carving out moments to take care of myself. Come along with me and my guests as we explore balancing farm life with personal needs on a realistic level. Practical ways to sprinkle a little joy and peace into your daily routine, nurturing relationships without losing your sense of self, and how to keep stress at bay and prevent burnout, all while staying focused on what we really want, feeling content and settled in our lives. So whether you're savoring a cup of coffee before the morning chaos begins, stealing a moment of quiet on your drive to town, or popping in your earbuds while wrestling with laundry and dishes, I invite you to join me. Let's laugh, learn, and cultivate contentment together. Hello, and welcome back to Cultivate Contentment. Today, I am chatting with Sally McManus, an English girl married to an Aussie boy. She is a passionate cook and mother of three wild and wonderful bush babes. She has lived and worked on farm, but always had a passion for a creative outlet of her own, her most recent being the Homestead Pantry Box that is a country woman's answer to meal delivery. Today, we are going to chat about how an English girl ended up as an outback station cook and butcher, married to an Aussie farmer, and how her passion for quality ingredients led to a business. And then we're going to chat all things Christmas food. Welcome, Sally.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I am intrigued as to how you ended up here. Obviously, you grew up in the UK. Do you want to give us a quick little rundown of how you were there and then how you got here, ended up on an outback station?
Well, I grew up in the country in England on a very small farm. I don't know if you guys would call it a farm. It's more like hobby farm size. My dad was a cattle dealer. And yeah, so we spent our childhood days in the paddock, playing on the hay bales, quite similar to a lot of people here, but just a lot smaller. And then I grew up and went to uni, finished uni. I was working in a gastropub. I was assistant manager there and I was working front of house. So I wasn't doing the food side of things then. But it was really busy, very passionate, lots of great food, wine, foodie people. And it was a really good experience. But I think I was 24 then and working about 80 hours a week, living my life at the restaurant. And my brother was traveling around the world and he had landed in New Zealand and said, why don't you come over for a year, travel around New Zealand, we'll go to Australia and sort of have a look around. So I just sort of on a whim, I'd broken up with a boyfriend. So on a whim was like, great, I need a change. So instead of dyeing my hair, I flew across to the other side of the world and landed up in New Zealand, traveled around for 5 weeks and then went to Melbourne and got an apartment with my brother and got a job there. We didn't really do a lot of traveling. We just sort of got into work and just enjoyed that Melbourne lifestyle. After 9 months, I decided I wanted to extend my stay. So I only had a year's visa, working holiday visa. So I thought what a great experience it would be to go out onto a cattle station and have a look. And that's sort of the end of the story there. I went up there, fell in love with the outback, the people, the experience, the whole life, and ended up staying up there rather than going back down to Melbourne. And they sponsored me and I did 4 years on the station. I started as a camp cook and then became the station cook and also did all of the butchery work and did that for 4 years. In the mix there was James, who is now my husband. It wasn't love at first sight, that's for sure. We sort of worked together for a year and then it sort of blossomed from there. Yeah, we're now married and we've got 3 children. I've got 2 boys and a girl, Charlie, Molly, and Jimmy, who are 7, 6, and 4. So they keep us quite busy.
I think I hear it from a lot of women that they either met their husband at the pub or they worked with them on the farm. And they're the 2 places where rural women seem to meet their husbands.
Because that's the 2 places men are, rural men are, right?
Exactly. Where else would you find them?
Exactly. Generally working, sometimes at the pub.
Yep. So how was it working on the station? Was it a culture shock? Was it a very remote station?
Yeah, it was. So it was up on the Cape, so far north Queensland. We were about 4.5 hours from Cairns inland. Yes, it was remote. Like, I remember driving in and asking the gentleman that picked me up, asking him so many questions and just loving it. Like, there was nothing about it I didn't like. It was a culture shock for the difference in people and sort of how that was. Took a while. I mean, it's hard because I think, like, you know, there was quite a good connection with everybody already when I arrived because I didn't start at the beginning of the year. No, I loved it. I loved the early mornings. I just loved the vastness of the place, like the working hard, the playing hard. Yeah, I just loved every minute of it.
It's one of those things that I hear from people that have worked out on the stations. You either get there and you just love it and embrace it, or on like the second day, you're like, nope, I'm going home.
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's something about the north. I think, you know, it gets under your skin. If you really love it, it really gets under your skin. And James and I, sort of romance, like there's almost a romance about it up there. It's just, there's nothing, nothing else quite like it.
A day on the station of cooking and things, I'm assuming there's a lot more planning that would go into living out there, because it's not like you can just duck to the shops for things when you need them, and you're cooking for a lot of people as well. So what was that like?
I think I'm quite an organized person. I think, you know, I enjoy that. So the meal planning side, I mean, it was certainly a learning curve trying to remember. I remember I cooked a big piece of corned meat and I popped it into the cool room and it was like our weekend off and I was like, great, that's, you know, perfect. And by the time Monday came around, it had gone and everyone was like, where's the cold meat for the sandwiches? And I was like, I learned very quickly and like sort of implemented quite a few things to make sure, like I would cook quite a few pieces and cryovac them. I'd have some in the freezer, some in the cool room, and then there'd be some that we'd be eating at the time. So I learned very quickly to be very organized and have lots of food. But yeah, I think dry stores, we did orders twice a year. And then I think it was every 2 weeks that we sort of got fresh things in.
So where are you and your husband based now?
So we're down in the Riverina now. We have moved around a lot. So we lived up on the Cape and then we moved down to Mudgee in New South Wales and then we moved out to Warren and then we went back up to Queensland and lived in 2 different houses up there. And then 2 years ago, we moved down to the Riverina and we're on a property which is along the Murrumbidgee River. So we work for a corporate ag business managing properties.
So you've got a passion for food, obviously. Did that come from your family or was it just something that was always within you?
I think both. I've done a lot of thinking about this year. I lost my grandma at the start of the year and I couldn't get back for the funeral. So I wrote some words down. And when I thought back to all of our memories, a lot of it was around food, whether it be in the garden or around the kitchen table. We were quite a big family and my mum's a great cook. and great entertainer too. So, you know, it's from there. But also it was in me too, because I think I remember announcing to mum when I was about 14 that she could stop making my lunch because I was going to make my own over a weekend, or making my breakfast, and I would cook myself some breakfast, or I would cook myself some lunch. And very basic. I think my favorite was pasta, sweet corn and cheese. But remember feeling really empowered that I was making my own lunch and enjoying cooking.
Every mum's dream, a child that wants to pack their own lunchbox. And so this passion for food has been your creative outlet, and you then turned it into a business. Can you tell us the story, how that came about?
So I think James and I sort of we sort of spent 2 years together on the station, and then he went down to Geelong to study at university, and I stayed at the station for one more year. And then we met when we got back. So we moved to Mudgee together, and he finished his uni via correspondence. Sort of from there, I think it's because we've always moved around a lot. So I've always wanted to create something that I can take with me. And it's changed over the years from what I have done, but started with baking for cafes in Mudgee, and then slowly doing a little bit of catering. We had the bacon and egg stall at the farmers markets, and I used to bake lots of things and sell them. When we moved out to Warren, I started my catering more. I had my catering business. I did some weddings. I was a bush caterer. So I went everywhere. I went to lots of little halls that had only a sink, and, you know, I would cook up whatever it was for either a wedding or a ball or a party. Lots of lunches in gardens and things. And then I also used to make freezer meals as well. So on a weekly basis, I would just put a post out and say, ladies, I'm making lasagna this week. You can have it in serves of four or serves of six. And people would order. And then I would deliver on a certain day into town. So that's where it sort of really took off as my own creative outlet business. Yeah. When we moved out there, and I needed to work, but we lived out of town.
Mm.
So yeah, and to carry on from cooking, from being up north, and all of the, you know, I've worked in hospitality since the age of 14. So that all came together. And then we got married and started having kids, and working on a weekend and planning and catering became a bit harder. So I had to slow down, and we moved up to Queensland, and I sort of stopped altogether because I had a bit of a health issue with an autoimmune disease and lots of things going on in my body, and having to rethink the way I cooked and ate because I was exhausted and I wasn't sleeping and my cortisol levels were all over, and I had a 18-month-old and a 6-month-old, and life was just wasn't that great. So after I did all that, it's strange when, like, you go from someone, I went from eating gluten and dairy and all the things to having to take myself off all of that for a period of time and slowly either reintroduce it or stay off it completely. So I don't eat gluten by choice for health reasons, and I came off dairy for a while. And it is surprising how much things are hidden, not hidden, but packed in food that you would not expect.
Yes, been discovering that lately while I'm reading labels on my own gluten journey and going, why is there gluten in this? There's no reason that should be there.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, having to rediscover, you know, all the nice things and sauces and marinades and all those things that make your life a little bit easier, and not being able to use them. So it sort of led me on a bit of a journey, personal journey, but also that creative outlet was always bubbling away. I had my third child. So we had Jimmy in 2020, and that was I think he was in the September, and then 2021 I launched the Homestead Pantry Box. So I don't know why I thought it was a good idea, but I think I'd had a period of time off work, and yeah, I just think I thought I could do it. So I did. I jumped in with the Homestead Pantry Box because initially I thought that I was going to create my own line of sauces and marinades and things. And then when I started looking and researching, I found that there were so many out there, so many Australian-made small batch businesses that were creating gorgeous things. I think because I found all of these delicious products out there, and because we were so rural at the time, our closest center was an hour and 40 minutes away. So to go to the supermarket with the list, and there wasn't really a great lot of scope to walk through the aisles and look at everything. So yeah, I created the Homestead Pantry Box, which was it was a box of 6 items, pantry shelf stable, so that it can go into the mail and be delivered anywhere in Australia, of clean, delicious, easy to use pantry goodies. And then I would write easy recipes to go with those pantry products to create some inspiration for the ladies who bought from me.
I love the concept of it, because we just grabbed one of your mystery bundle boxes and it's fantastic. It just makes you look at making things that you wouldn't necessarily make yourself.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I like to, I try and keep the recipes quite simple and to use products that, you know, that's generally going to be in your freezer. Mince, chicken, chops, a roast, stew meat. It's designed to inject a bit of inspiration into your weekly meal planning without it being too difficult, without it being too overwhelming. And yeah, I just think I have that creative outlet to be able to produce some fun and easy recipes so you don't have to think too hard about it.
And so for now, the subscriptions are on hold, but people are still able to order things through the website, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So I did, it sort of went for about 2.5 years. And at the start of this year, I started the year tired. And I think I got to March. And because I also have 3 kids and a very busy husband, and we work for, you know, a company, and we had a big event. And I just, in between that big event, packed up 150 boxes and sent them out in between everything else. And I was just exhausted by the end of it. So I just had to pop it on hold and reassess life and where that was leading us, because our seasons change and life changes. And so, yeah, for now, I still have the Homestead Pantry Box, but it's an online shop. I have all the products there for you to buy, and all the recipes are linked to the products too. So you can still jump in and choose the things that you like. And we also have some bundles in there. So if you don't want to think about what to buy, you can buy our best sellers, or you can buy our family-friendly pack, or, you know, have a look there and decide. So I think that's the happy medium for now.
I love that you could take that moment and sit back and go, I'm exhausted. We'll just put it on hold and that's okay. Because I think that a lot of the time we would just try and push through and go, nope, I can keep doing this. And yeah, but you've just said, okay, it's on hold. It's not finished. This is just the season I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. By no means was it an easy decision. And I make it sound like it was a very easy decision. There was a lot of tears and a lot of turmoil and thoughts and emotions that were with that. But I think, you know, listening to your podcast and also lots of other, there's so many women out there that we just try and do it all. And I don't think you can do it all at the same time. Or if you do, you burn yourself out. And because I'd already been in a state like that with my autoimmune, and I know how it feels to get down to that point, and I knew I couldn't or didn't want to. So yeah, it wasn't an easy decision, but it was the right decision.
Is it time to plan your Christmas menu? The Christmas Pantry Box is here to make things simple and delicious. It's packed with hand-picked products to help you create a beautiful, stress-free Christmas menu. Sally has done all the hard work for you, finding the best Australian-made goodies and pairing them with recipes to spark a bit of inspiration. Think crowd pleasers that taste like effort but don't feel like it. Ready to make your festive spread look like a Pinterest board without the stress? Order your Christmas Pantry Box today. And just for Cultivate Contentment listeners, use the code GROUNDEDCHRISTMAS for a 10% discount. That's Grounded Christmas, GROUNDEDXMAS for a 10% discount. So we're talking about being busy and we're coming into the busy season of the year. And I'm going to say the word Christmas. We're nearly there. Oh, it's not that far away.
Yay.
And I love Christmas. It makes me so excited. My husband is a complete Christmas Grinch. But I have enough Christmas spirit for the both of us. So it's okay. So I think with Christmas, food is such a big component of Christmas. So I put the call out to my followers on Instagram and said, what are your questions around Christmas food? And I can tell you they really came in with some great questions. So I'm going to quiz Sally. We're going to find out all of the expert advice for planning our food for Christmas. So let's start with, what are your go-to dishes for Christmas that never fail to impress your guests?
It's quite simply my ham recipe and roast potatoes, which are two key elements to the Christmas table. And I think done well, never get complaints on those.
Yes, I love good roast potatoes. And I think there is, what was the tip I was always told is that if you want really crispy potatoes, you have to peel them. You can't skip that step. Is that right?
So I'm going to be controversial. I don't.
Okay. I've been given the wrong advice here then.
Well, no. I don't think you've been given the wrong advice. I just think we all probably have different methods. But I think for me, like you've got to parboil them. When you drain them, you let the steam come up through them just to pull out a bit of moisture, whether you take the skin on or off, and then hot oven and the right fat to make them tasty and crispy. And my go-to's is duck fat or beef tallow, and then season well at the end. So plenty of salt.
All right, I love it. Great tips. How do you balance maintaining the tradition of food while introducing new ideas to Christmas meals? Because I know Christmas does, you know, your traditional roast meal, but what if you want to put in something new? Because, yeah, in Australia, we're a little bit different on Christmas Day, I think, sometimes too.
Yeah, I think so. And Christmas for me is very different over here too. Like, you know, I am very much grew up in the cold, snow, big meal, dark, cold, and then snoozes in the afternoon. Whereas here it's hot, it's bright.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think to mix, that's a really good question because I'll probably just give you an example. I think that what we created last year with our family is because we were together for a few days, we actually went, we did have a hot dinner. It was quite traditional. I think introducing something new might be putting in a different stuffing or trying a warm salad rather than putting in the roast veggies or whatever vegetables you generally use. We broke it up though. So we had the traditional dinner, but we had our seafood the night before. So we got to play around and do some exciting things with seafood and make that a bit bigger. And just so it was split up, so we weren't trying to do all the things together on one day. I know it might not work for some if you only get together on the day, but yeah, I think if you can break it up, that's great. And I think, yeah, introducing a couple of new recipes, get rid of the sprouts, put a warm salad in instead. But I'm thinking, you know, like a roasted vegetable salad, something that's going to go well with a hot dinner.
Yeah, I think the seafood on Christmas Day is a very Aussie thing.
Very Aussie. Well, my mum's partial to a prawn cocktail. as a starter, but in the UK. But yeah, definitely an Aussie thing.
When do you start planning your Christmas menu and how do you decide what to cook?
Well, look, I think for me, I start in October because that's when I make my Christmas cake. But that's the only thing I do in October.
I have loved following the journey of the Christmas cake on Instagram because I'm not a Christmas cake person. The whole thing of fruit and cake, just, I don't know, not for me. But I've absolutely loved watching the process of it being made.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and well, it's my great-grandma's recipe. And I just think it's great because it is something that keeps you, you know, you cook it in October and then each week you give it a feed. In my case, rum, whether you want to use brandy or whiskey or whatever else, whatever alcohol, but it's a boozy Christmas cake. And I'm not usually a fruitcake lover, but I do love this one. And it goes well with ice cream or it goes well with cheese. So it kind of suits both. But in terms of planning, I think the main thing you need to do is, one, make a plan. Work out what you're doing for Christmas, whether you're with it's a big gathering with family and or whether it's something small. But I think give yourself a good hour and sit down. And I know that that's the key, is to actually make a plan. And you want to be doing it probably a good month out before Christmas Day, so you can start with getting the big things ordered and out the way. And then you can also start talking with family members, whether they're bringing food, making a dish, or whether they're coming to help you, how, you know, whichever way that you like doing it. But yeah, key, 1 month out, write it down, make a plan, make a list.
Great advice. I think that is it, that it gets to like a couple of weeks before Christmas and everyone starts messaging each other going, well, I thought you were doing that and I thought you were doing that, and that never ends well.
No. And I think also, like, you know, I think for me, I'm always very happy within my family or with husbands. I call them my family, my husband's side of the family, because we spend Christmas with them every year because we can't get to the UK. Like, I'm always very happy to be the one that organizes the food, and they're always really happy for me to do that too. But I certainly don't do all the cooking. Like, I might make the plan and then we have a discussion about, are you going to make food and bring it, or are we going to make a budget and everyone contribute X amount of money and I will buy the things in? It really just depends on how far you've got to travel, who's coming, that sort of thing.
Do you prepare any make-ahead dishes to reduce the stress on Christmas Day?
Yes, absolutely. I think there's lots of things that can be prepared beforehand. And again, I'll refer back to getting your list sorted out and working out your meals, not just the Christmas Day meal. It's breakfast if you've got people staying, if they're there the night before, if they're there on Boxing Day. But in terms of the Christmas Day meal, braised cabbage, like I like to do a red braised cabbage, that can be cooked and frozen. Stuffings can be prepared and frozen and then cooked on the day. Desserts can also be made and frozen ahead of time. You can definitely help yourself by getting some things made and frozen. And then a few days beforehand, you can be prepping stuff. You can parboil your potatoes. You can get vegetables chopped. You can cook your ham and have it so it's ready to slice, marinate other meats. So there's lots of little things that can be done to help along the way.
Yeah, it's all that pre-planning.
I'm just going to keep referring back to it. Get a good plan.
How do you plan meals to accommodate large gatherings, especially when you've got a lot of dietary preferences or restrictions? I feel you'll have a good answer for this one.
I think it'll help if I give an example. Mm-hmm. My sister-in-law is celiac. I don't have gluten. There's people who don't love a lot of dairy. The men, heavy meat eaters. I think, again, it's just you've got to refer back to creating a list, having in mind what that dietary need is. So if it's gluten, if you've got a menu and you can just highlight the things that are gluten, and also chat to the family member that has the allergy. Maybe you can put them in charge of bringing the gluten-free bread, the gluten-free crackers, just to make sure that, you know, you are covering yourself for those things. And most of the meals, most of the dishes, I feel that you can adjust. Like croutons can be put on the side, or you can actually make gluten-free croutons or even buy them. Dairy is probably a little bit more tricky, but there is some really great options out there now. You can buy desserts or make dairy-free desserts.
How do you involve the family in the meal planning and preparation process, or do you include the family?
I do. We do it together. Definitely, like in our family, I'm probably the person that organizes it. So I think it's great. Like if you're hosting, then you're going to be the main person that is organizing the menu. And that's fine. Like, you know, organize the menu or just say, look, you make your plan. You say, I will do the meats. I'm going to do the potatoes and I will get this and that, whatever it is you are very comfortable with. And then delegate out and say, who would like to make a salad? Who would like to make a dessert? We also need someone to collect bread from the bakery. We need ice bringing. There's lots of people that want to help without having too many people in the kitchen. You can give them something that's going to make them feel like they've helped. So, for instance, my brother-in-law, he might bring all the nibbles for two nights. And that's great. He hasn't done any cooking, but he's gone and got the cheeses, the meats, the crackers, the chips, all of that. And that's off your list. So you can just have that plan. Uncle Pete is bringing nibbles. You know, Auntie Jen is collecting bread from the bakery.
That's great. Yeah. It's delegating it out to people within their skill level as well. Like, you know, so that you're not saying
absolutely.
You have to bring this thing that requires all this effort and they don't really like cooking. And yeah, so it's working to people's strengths.
Absolutely. And, you know, look, if, I don't know, Sarah, your sister-in-law, is good at making a certain chocolate dessert or loves to bake or loves to do something sweet, just say, can you do something sweet? And it needs to serve six people. And, you know, it's being organized and also sharing the load. So you are not on the day or on the week up going mad trying to do everything when it could be shared. Because, I mean, let's face it, the period up to Christmas is amazing and exciting, but it's one of the most stressful times of the year. It's just exhausting. School's finished, kids are tired. Harvest is happening or just finishing. It's just so busy.
You don't want to be putting more stress on yourself than you need to when you could easily delegate things out really simply.
Yeah. And yeah, just very simply. Someone bring the ice. Someone, yeah, bring the nibbles. Someone bring the breakfast gear.
How do you make the most of seasonal ingredients when planning for the Christmas meals?
Oh, that's a good question. I think lots of great seasonal fruit and veggies are around at Christmas. I just will keep referring back to the plan. And also, if you're starting a month out, you're going to give yourself time to be able to look at food magazines and look online and get a little bit of inspiration, because there's lots out there at the time. And then being able to select your favorite seasonal fruit and veg. You know, Woolworths and Coles always have a great magazine out at Christmas and lots of great simple ideas for salads and desserts. And I think that's probably a really good place to start. And then, you know, obviously your favorite people like myself that you follow online that will be sharing lots of summer salads that are incorporating the seasonal fruit and veg that are available. So each month I actually share a seasonal fruit and veg list. So you can hop
fantastic.
Onto my Instagram page if you like, and you'll be able to see what is in season right now, and you'll be able to pick your favorites, then start looking for a salad or a dessert that incorporates them.
Perfect. That is great to know. Have you ever had a Christmas meal disaster? And if so, how did you handle it?
Have you? I haven't.
Not that I could think of, not a big one. I know yeah. that it was a little bit stressful the year that we didn't have an oven. We just moved into this farmhouse and I cooked a turkey in our Weber barbecue.
Oh, wow.
And I'd never done it before. And I was like so stressed. I'm like, oh my God, it's going to get to lunchtime and we're going to have like raw turkey.
Oh, and it worked?
It actually worked out really well. And that, so that was good.
Yeah, wow. And that's a huge learning curve, isn't it?
Yes.
That you can cook a turkey in November.
Yes.
The only one I could think of is, I think probably it's my mum's disaster, really, because I was probably only 4 or 5. And we were, my brother and I were underneath the dining room table after Christmas lunch and everyone was sitting around. And it was a very old fashioned big table that had the wooden leaves in it. So you had to wind it up and then pop the wooden strip in and then put it in place underneath. You would lock it in place. And my brother told me to undo one side and he undid the other. And the whole table just vanished onto the floor, into the middle, and smashed all of her wedding crockery. And,
oh no. At least you'd already finished lunch.
Yeah, thankfully.
Okay. I think I know the answer to this one already. But if someone's feeling overwhelmed by the idea of cooking Christmas dinner, where should they start?
Write it down. Get it out of your head. I think, you know, we hold a lot in our head and we can make it feel 100% worse. But I think if you're just starting or if you're hosting for the first time or feeling overwhelmed, get a piece of paper, write down who's coming and how many people you've got, write down your idea of what you think you might want to cook. Write down who's great at doing things. If you know, if you've got a family member, again, just it's creating a plan and creating it early enough to be able to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other key thing is that we can do all the planning we want and things can still go wrong and you can still feel a little bit crazy on the day, but you just need to remember to enjoy it. And that, you know, if something is forgotten or something doesn't quite turn out the way that you had in your head, the chances are nobody else is going to know but you.
Mm-hmm.
So just not to worry. And I think the key is just to keep it simple. Don't try and do all of the things that are delicious. You know, not every item on the table needs to be big, fancy, or a new recipe. Stick to things that you're good at cooking, you know, that are going to taste good, and then just introduce or try a couple of new things. Because really, we're there to be together and enjoy the day. And the food is great, but it's secondary.
Yeah, that's the thing to remember, isn't it? Now, I'm going to throw one last question at you because I'm a dessert person. What's your favorite Christmas dessert?
I'm quite boring with desserts, I have to say. Either something really chocolatey or just something ice cream based. I'm not big on cream or pavlova, which, oh, don't kill me. I know that that is really Australian, but I think a really delicious chocolate tart would be my go-to with some ice cream.
You've just got me there because chocolate and ice cream, I'm a big brownie person, so brownies and ice cream, and yeah, I'm set.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was just going to say I do have a really delicious chocolate tart recipe that you might enjoy for Christmas, which is quite an easy one to put together. And so yours is a chocolate-based dessert too?
Yes. The kids love, I did one year, it's like a Malteser ice cream cake. Really simple. You just make like the ice cream into the pudding bowl. And then when it comes out, you like stick all the Maltesers around the outside and then you drizzle warm chocolate over the top. And they think that's the best thing ever. And really, there's no baking even required. You really can't stuff it up. And yeah, it's a great choice.
That sounds delicious. And that's it. I think, you know, a lot of things is that we eat with our eyes first. And I know that we see lots of beautiful pictures on social media and we see lots of beautiful pictures in magazines. And we sort of get in our head that we need to create something stunning. But actually, the simplest things are generally, you know, the nicest, like just keep it simple and easy.
The question I ask all my guests is, what is something at the moment that is helping you to cultivate contentment?
I was thinking about this morning as I was doing my morning routine. And I think that is something that is consistent every day for me, is that I take that time in the morning to wash my face and put on my face serums and creams, and it just, I have that 10 minutes to myself, and I love the feeling of them, and I love that I am looking after my skin, and I think that's, yeah, something that is solely for me.
I love that. It's simple, but it's exactly what you need to start the day.
Yeah, exactly.
For everyone that's listening, where can they find you and find all of the wonderful recipes that you put up with all the amazing food?
You can find me either on Instagram, which is the Homestead Pantry Box, or you can find me on our website, which is thehomesteadpantrybox.com.au. We have lots of great Christmas goodies on there for you to choose and to help you create a delicious menu and recipes too.
I highly recommend checking it out. We got some fantastic things this week that arrived in our mystery box that I'm very excited to try, and was very excited to see that there was gluten-free things in there, because I ordered the box pre being told I needed to try gluten-free, and I was going to be very sad if everything arrived and I couldn't use any of it. Thank you, Sally, for joining me. It's been a pleasure to talk about how you ended up where you are and all the things Christmas food.
Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed it, and I hope you have a really good Christmas, and everybody who's listening gets planned and feels organized and has a great Christmas too.
To everyone listening, please share what you've loved from this episode. What was your favorite tip? What are you going to be trying out to cultivate contentment for your Christmas day? Is it time to plan your Christmas menu? The Christmas Pantry Box is here to make things simple and delicious. It's packed with hand-picked products to help you create a beautiful, stress-free Christmas menu. Sally has done all the hard work for you, finding the best Australian-made goodies and pairing them with recipes to spark a bit of inspiration. Think crowd pleasers that taste like effort but don't feel like it. Ready to make your festive spread look like a Pinterest board without the stress? Order your Christmas Pantry Box today, and just for Cultivate Contentment listeners, use the code GROUNDEDCHRISTMAS for a 10% discount. That's Grounded Christmas, GROUNDEDXMAS, for a 10% discount. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Cultivate Contentment. I hope you found inspiration and practical tips to help you on your journey towards a more contented life. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing or following the podcast on your favourite platform. And don't forget to leave a review to let me know your thoughts. For more content and community support, be sure to follow on Instagram at Grounded Farm Wife. Remember, you're not alone in this journey. Together, we can continue to cultivate contentment in our lives. Until next time, take care and stay grounded.